Indeed. Welcome back, everybody. It's the Dom and Colin podcast. I am Colin, here once again with Dom to talk about the Survivor merge. Dom, how are you doing?
I am fantastic as ever. How are you?
I am doing very well. Another exciting merge episode in the books. I know a lot of people are talking about this being a prolific, all-time great episode, and I'm sure we're going to get into all the details from it later.
Okay,
but are you on?
Hold on.
Where are you? Okay, it sounds like you're not on board with that.
Well, we'll get into that in a second. How are you using prolific here, first of all?
As in, like, groundbreaking.
That is absolutely not what it means. But we'll go with it for now. Language is how people use it, and you are using it in unique and boundary-breaking ways. So I'm excited to see what else you can do with that. But, I liked the episode. Thought it was pretty good. Although, as will not surprise you, I have some hot takes about some of it. So I'm sure you can slap me down for those in due course.
Okay, well, I'm excited to grow as a person and find out what prolific means. I certainly am not confident that I'm using it correctly. So I'm glad to find out more on that front as the episode goes on. But Dom, before we get into all of the Survivor merge happenings and your hot takes about them, a couple of things that we wanted to just flag up before we get sidebarred with all of the actual stuff that we're here to talk about, but things you guys should know about quickly. First of all, the BoJack Horseman episode that we talked about coming soon last week is now out. I got to listen to that. That was a lot of fun. And in case you guys missed that, or the week prior, Dom had done an episode about The Simpsons. Both of those I thought were a ton of fun. And I think even people who are not, you know, giant fans of either of those shows would get a lot out of listening to both of those podcasts, and probably about watching both of those shows.
Yeah, if there's anyone out there who hasn't seen The Simpsons by now, I don't think any of us can help you. But if you haven't seen BoJack, that's a little bit more understandable, but no more forgivable. Go and rectify that as soon as possible, please.
Right. And then also coming soon, we have a podcast loosely about the documentary on Netflix, AlphaGo, but mostly just diving into artificial intelligence in general, which is something Dom knows a lot about. I don't want to oversell Dom's credentials. He always gets mad at me for doing that when it comes to AI, but that's a lot of fun. And then also something we have coming tonight, we're actually a couple hours from now going to be doing a live, I think it's going to be a Google Hangout or maybe a Facebook Live event of some sort. Austin Trupp, great friend of the podcast, is going to be putting out Survivor Maryland All-Stars very soon. And Dom and I have been invited to join as part of a panel previewing that season. And so very much looking forward to that podcast, which I hope we were going to be able to release on this network as a podcast potentially. And also just that season, very excited to be checking that out as well.
Yeah, finally, after 18 months or whatever it is since the teaser came out, it's finally on the horizon. And fake Survivor winner Adam Klein will also be on the panel there if you need any more motivation for that. And once again, like with Simpsons, like with BoJack, if you haven't seen Survivor Maryland and you need something to hit your Survivor fix, definitely check that out, because that's, I think, of all of the fan-made or custom Survivors, whatever you want to call them out there, it's by far the best that I've seen. And Austin does a great job hosting that, producing it, and editing it, even though it takes him a little bit longer than we would like.
Yeah, and I guess relatedly, I don't think we've announced this on the podcast yet, but the March Madness bracket tournament that we ran, Austin Trupp actually won that. He's going to be winning 6 free months on Patreon, as well as the hat that we used to draw names out of for our cast previews. So congratulations, Austin, and certainly everyone out there listening who is not Austin Trupp, be excited for finding out how Survivor Maryland All-Stars ends up playing out, because I know I certainly am, and that season finally, as Dom mentioned, dropping after a couple of years in production, but it's totally worth the wait. Austin does such a good job with that, so really looking forward.
Yeah, me too, although it's a little bit scary having to do a podcast without the magic of editing. The curtain will finally drop, and you'll see what we're like when we aren't able to airbrush our worst parts out of existence.
Yeah, all right. That should be a total nightmare, but I guess we have that to look forward to in a couple hours. So, all right, Dom, let's get into the Survivor at hand today, which is Survivor Ghost Island. Our merge episode rolls around here, and as soon as this episode kicks in, there's no preamble at all. We just dive right into people getting boated over to the original Navidi camp, and everyone just getting a seat around this merge feast, getting their new buff, a random seat, by the way, as it turns out. turns out, which is, I think, something we'll dive into in a little bit.
They took pains to emphasize it was random so that when Chris conveniently won the offer later, that there would be no questions about it. But let's do what the show didn't do and talk about Bradley for a second, because as you said, we heard nothing about the fallout from the Bradley boot last time, and usually that's something that you hear, especially with something like this happening just before the merge, when you would think like Kellen and the others seeing Dom having done that would change their view about him in some way, and instead we just got nothing. It's like Bradley basically didn't exist after he was voted out. What did you make of that, if anything? Was it just a case of saving valuable seconds so that we could devote even more to Dom versus Chris, or was there some reason that they did that?
Right, because that is the thing. The way that this merge story is going to get told is going to be fairly one-dimensionally, where with Dom versus Chris just being that prevailing narrative in terms of how this entire vote is going to play out. But yeah, my takeaway was, I guess it's not going to matter later on that people aren't going to be too mad or too nervous about Dominic for voting Bradley out. Because I think even if it didn't matter right now, if that was going to be something that would matter later on, they would at least flag up that that could be an issue for Dominic or whomever else going forward, that voting Bradley out might have been something that could come back to haunt them. We know that that's a theme they like going back to this season. And so to get absolutely nothing on that front, I think is not only a signal to me that it's not going to play at least a role on the TV show going forward, but also it's certainly in line with, I think, the way they treated Bradley overall on this season. And I'm not trying to say that's like totally undeserved, but I did think it is almost fitting for the guy that they really, just as far as I could tell, didn't even begin to paint in anything but a negative light, to give him no real parting thoughts from the rest of the people on the show. I thought was pretty consistent with that.
This is one reason that I don't like not having the rites of passage or the fallen comrades walk anymore, just to see them try and find nothing to say about everyone until they get to Bradley and they just can't, so they just unload as many expletives as they possibly can.
A lot of people don't care if you call it fallen comrades or rites of passage. They're interchangeable as far as I've ever heard. No one ever gets upset over using the wrong one there.
That would be a very silly thing to get Bennett out of shape about, so I'm glad that we're all on the same page. But initially, I was thinking maybe this is bad for my girl, Kellen, because you would think she would get the chance to explain what losing her closest ally would mean for her. But thinking about it, I realized that she and Bradley were never even highlighted as a pair within the game. We know from outside the game that they were a tight pair and possibly more, but within the confines of Survivor Ghost Island, we were never led to believe that they were anything more than just two people who happened to be on Naviti in the same tribe initially. So maybe that doesn't count against her. And we will see a lot of good Kellen content. There's possibly a portmanteau in there. Need to workshop that. But we get a lot of stuff from Kellen over the course of the episode. And in particular, she gets to announce the merge for us. She says that the work that she put in to build these relationships during the swaps is going to pay off, and she can't wait to see what damage I can do. Me neither, but my question is, when is that going to happen? Because we really didn't see any of that this episode. She was the one person other than Chris and Dom, and I guess Wendell, to really get any screen time at all. But what we saw is that brief meeting with the other Naviti women, where they go after Libby, and then that never amounts to anything. And we see her just hanging around some other conversations, which is a sign that people trust her, but it's not made explicit that, oh, this is an example of her doing that damage. So is this setting her up for down the line, or are we meant to see the rest of this episode as a contradiction to that intro?
I think this is setting her up for down the line. Like, clearly the story that they have been telling for a lot of the pre-merge was about Dom and Chris, and we had forecasted last week when we came in just talking about what we might expect to see at the merge, that would be the primary focus of the way this episode would go down, and probably the way the however many episodes went down, where both Dom and Chris were still in the game. And so I understand why Kellen, if that really is the way the camp is being divided out there on the island, Kellen's in a position where she's probably not going to have to do a ton of work here, and I think that's just fine. And so I think the fact that we are still seeing a fair amount of her, and she is the one, we're still getting to hear what she's thinking about it, even if she's not the one driving all of like the strategic action, I still think is definitely a good sign for your girl, Kellen, who I had not realized was, by the way, your girl to that extent, Dom. I didn't know that you were such a Kel stan already at this point, but maybe I just haven't been paying close enough attention to the things that you say. What did you think about on that topic, I guess? Like, are you concerned that maybe the fact that she didn't get a ton of like her strategic contributions, it's such an important merge vote, maybe may mean bad things for her going forward.
I don't think so, largely because nobody else got those either. So unless you're comparing her to Dorm or Wendell specifically, then there's really not much else to say. And I think it's going to be a case of wait and see with the rest of this stuff, because now that this Chris and story, this Chris and Dom storyline for now has been deflated, the rest of the season has more room to breathe, and so some of these people who had to take a back seat will maybe get to come into their own, and maybe Ken will be among those people.
Right, and I would say not much of an episode has gone by where Kellen has, in my opinion, taken a back seat. I would still say, as I think you are on board with, she was one of the primary focuses, despite not being super involved with how the vote went.
Right. So Chris is going to get this offer. Whether that's on the level, you can decide for yourself, but I think it was. I think they just happened to strike gold there with exactly Chris getting that offer. So his opportunity is going to be he'll get to go to Ghost Island in the middle of the night and see what's waiting for him there. And he expresses this understandable concern that he might get caught and have to explain himself. I was thinking at the time, would he be able to say, I need to go and see medical, and they're taking me away to go visit them because they can't bring their stuff out there in the middle of the night? Firstly, do you think that would go down well? And secondly, would they actually let him say that? Would they let him use this external part of the show to get away for his lie?
I don't know what lies you are or are not allowed to tell. Like, I remember... I guess it would have been during Cambodia. Abby Maria was right on the edge between trying to pushing the line of potentially involving Jeff Probst, making him a part of her lie. And it was made clear to her, you can't do that. I'm sure there are specific rules about things you can and can't lie about. You can't say oh, the producers made me go away or whatever. And then need producers to back your story up. I don't think that's how it works. But I do think that Chris would probably
quickly for the people at home and also me, because I don't remember it. What was that example with Abby?
I think where she wanted to lie about what her advantage did. She got an advantage in the immunity challenge, and she wanted to claim that it was a two-part thing. I don't even remember what the other part was, but she essentially needed Jeff Probst to I think her initial angle was get Jeff Probst to almost validate this lie for her, it was made clear, as far as I could tell, to her by production ahead of time that would not be something she was allowed to do. Leading into the challenge they went to where she tried to do that, they aired a confessional of her basically repeating my imagination is saying they sat her down and said, Abby, repeat this rule back to us. Make it clear you understand you can't use Jeff as part of your lie. And so I think, I don't know where medical falls within that kind of spectrum of if you are allowed to use medical in your lie or whatever. But what I was going to say is I don't think it would be that difficult for Chris to come up with something that would be believable and within the rules for why he was away. I don't know. I don't know what they're allowed to do. Medical is a great example. Medical is a perfect, totally fine, whatever. I think take your pick between medical or I was doing a confessional or whatever. I think they're all equally unlikely in the middle of the night.
I guess also, if you're stumbling away from what seems to be a bathroom break or whatever, no one's going to be chasing you down and demanding to see where you're going. So I don't think it's actually that hard to get away with unless you draw attention to yourself, which Chris has a knack of doing. So maybe it would be. But from what I've heard... From what I've heard, Ghost Island is very close to the merged beach, so that whole expedition could have taken maybe half an hour in total. So it's not like you wake up in the middle of the night, you notice that Chris is gone, and then you wake up again, he's still gone, and you start to ask questions. It can be a very open and shut thing.
Yeah, well, first of all, I do like that they've at least... ostensibly ramped up the difficulty level from what they did in Cambodia with Jeremy Collins, where it was just wander away for 2 minutes through this lit path to pick up your new idol. I would guess that it probably took Chris in the neighborhood of half an hour, which is at least a much more difficult time away from camp to get away with. Although that being said, I don't think it was going to be too difficult for him to pull off, or at least not as difficult as they probably wanted us to believe on the show. The other thing I wanted to go back to is just the fact that they were seated randomly at the merge. I think it was Kellen we got give a confessional saying we all got random seats. I think that as soon as they are told, okay, everyone draw a rock to find out, or draw a number to find out what seat you get, shouldn't everyone in the game at that point, or at least very quickly, once a few people start talking about it, recognize we're drawing random seats for a reason. Someone's going to reach into their napkin and get something.
Yeah, so in the past, when there's been something at the merch fees, it's quite often been in the food itself, or in the package that they're given, or sometimes it's away from camp in a way that people can access easily. But if it's being done this way, then if it's going to be on the level, you need to ensure that whoever gets that buff is chosen at random, and so you need to choose that at random somehow. I would be starting to think about it. Although the issue is, let's say you're not the one person who's lucky enough to get it, then how are you going to notice that? How are you going to realize that, oh, I'm not the one who was lucky enough to get whatever it happens to be?
Well, I guess just what I'm saying is, as soon as we just find out we're being seated randomly, to me that would immediately trigger, why would we be seated randomly unless we had to be seated randomly? And I would imagine there would be plenty of other people who, as soon as they found out they were seated randomly, for instance, like Dominic and Laurel, and I'm guessing Kellen and potentially many others, realized, okay, one of us is going to get some sort of prize. And I would be surprised, but the general point I'm trying to make and why I went back to this is, I would guess whether it came up at the merge feast or later on, I would be quite surprised if by, a few hours after the merge feast, everyone in the entire tribe was not aware, okay, someone just got something at that lunch.
What do you think about the kind of thing that you had in Gabon, where there is an idol effectively in plain sight? People know where it is, or at least they discover that information somehow. And so it becomes this question of who is daring enough, or who feels desperate enough to just get that in plain view of everybody. Is that easily exploitable? Because if you know that you're on the outs, you just get a guaranteed idol and there's no suspense? Or could that actually be an exciting twist the next time you get to a merge?
I think the merge is a little too early for me with that kind of twist. I think far too often we would get the Gabon treatment that we saw, where everyone just comes together and says, okay, we'll all as a group just agree to remove this from play and throw it into the ocean. It is so hard when there are 13 people left. Like, it takes such a ridiculous set of circumstances, I think, for anyone to feel really great about, okay, I'm definitely going to go and get that idol. I think even someone like Tony Vlachos would recognize the obvious downside in getting an idol right in front of everyone when there are still 13 people left in the game.
I don't know. I think there's a certain upside to taking that, guaranteeing your safety for one round. You can have it be the idol that Chris should have played this time, and you can also even prove that you're trustworthy by telling everyone, I'm going to play it tonight, and then playing it tonight, and you get to cement that reputation. So it feels like all upside to me, but anyway, this is a tangent that shouldn't need to exist in the first place. So let's get back.
I would say I'm all for pulling that off. Throw that in there at like final nine, final eight, somewhere like that, where it's the mid part of the game, where I think you could have a few different people feel like it would be a good thing to go for, and it's not so late. I think when you do it at the merge, it's just too early for I think often anyone to feel like it's worth going for, and later in the game I think it would just be too overpowered to throw in that late just as a freebie. So I think right around that final 10 through final 8 range would be where I would do it.
I think it's worth jumping ahead now to when Chris finds the idol and then discussing some of the implications there so that we don't keep going back and forth.
Sure.
So Chris succeeds on his stealth mission. He sneaks out, he gets to Ghost Island, and when he gets there, he finds he has an idol, but there's more. He can maybe sacrifice his vote or risk his vote to give that idol extra longevity. So right now it's only good for that tribal council. He can extend its life if he gets the 50-50 shot, and then he can repeat that over and over again. So for Chris, the way it ends up is almost tragically ironic, where he wins the first round, and in doing so, gives himself the rope to hang himself, I guess, where he now gets the freedom to play it at another time. He gets greedy, takes that freedom, and ends up getting voted out that night. Whereas if he just lost on the first round, he would have had to play it. I guess Libby would have been voted out somehow instead, and then he would live to fight another day.
Yeah. It reminded me, I have not been watching this season of Big Brother Canada 6, but I did listen to the podcast on RHAP about Big Brother Canada 6 after this recent just whatever production interference atrocity just went on.
I formally retract any endorsement that I previously gave to Big Brother Canada 6. You don't need to catch up, don't need to watch, don't need to follow anything. Just pretend it doesn't exist.
I'm going to choose not to gloat in this moment and talk about the example that I heard. It seems like something similar just happened on there where because of some crazy twist, basically the girl who ended up being the victim of it was only available to be the victim of it because she did such a good job keeping this guy from using the regular veto. If she had played worse at the actual game, she would have benefited from this twist. But because she did such a good job, she ended up being the victim of it, which I think it sounds along some similar lines to what we're saying about Chris here. I know Rob made the same point on Know It Alls as well, where it is almost hysterical that the best thing he could have done is get it wrong and lose his vote and be forced to play that idol for himself that night. And by the way, I do think it is amazing that it just so happens that this was JT's idol from Game Changers, which JT didn't even bring with him to the tribal council he was voted out of. And now Chris, when it expires, you have to play it either tonight or next round. You know votes are coming on you tonight. He chooses to sit on JT's idol. I really do love the poetry in that. And while I'm not someone who generally believes in that kind of, anything beyond coincidence, I do just love that is how it worked out here.
JT's idol might actually have been physically left there and just matured over time. So the tagline might work there. But for as much as I hate all of these Game Changers relics coming in, like if you're going to take this broad sweep of the history of the show, it feels like you don't want to focus on the most recent All-Star season. But if you're going to do that, then I like having something that, as you said, does have that nice symbolism to it.
Yeah, well, I think they are aware that probably most casual fans are not going to remember too far back, and that Game Changers is within the realm of reasonable, memories still being there. Like, people will hopefully remember JT getting voted out in that pre-merge situation, or will hopefully remember, the way Michaela went out when the legacy advantage comes into play. Although, based on the casuals that I have been talking to, that has not been the case. They do not recall these things, even when they see the clips. But what are you going to do?
They've already established that they're willing to show you to just splice in these clips of footage from 10 seasons ago to show you to fill in that background in case you don't know it yourself. So I feel like if you're going to do that already, why not go further back and explore some other seasons?
Well, to give an answer to a question you may not have even wanted an answer to, I think like a practical reason for that may be a lot of these advantages didn't come about until the 30s or so. Like you can only go so far back if you want to use an extra vote or a vote steal. But you are right. Why not make it someone else's idol from back? Why not make this Jason Siska's real idol that he got voted out with or whatever? It's like a callback to a real classic season instead of something so recent. But Dom, I want to return to the question of just Chris and his decision to gamble here. I think there is a real question of whether or not that's a good idea. I know it may on the surface feel like why not go for it, and it seems like that was Chris's attitude as well of okay, I'm gonna just play until I lose. But in exactly Chris's spot, I really do think that just a thinking player there would recognize the imminent danger he would be in and the potential value of his vote this round, even though there are 13 people. And while you could potentially keep this idol alive for more rounds if you run good enough, I really wonder if Chris would have been better off, and I'm trying not to be just totally results oriented here, in just saying, my vote is more important than the possibility of extending the life of this idol another round. I'd rather just guarantee my immunity here, go back to camp potentially with whatever note comes with this and show people I'm totally free. I'm totally safe. You can't take me out this round. Who wants to work with me now? I think there could be a lot of value in Chris just going back to camp with an idol that everyone knows he has to play that night.
I think the danger there is that, let's say Dom and Wendell do take control, they might just pile votes onto Angela again or to someone else that is associated with Chris, and people might be willing to just let that slide. Whereas currently, no one thinks that Chris has an idol or any form of protection. So when he loses that challenge, but I would imagine at least the target is going on Chris first and foremost, and then only on someone else if it has to. Although it was interesting kind of that we had two votes for Libby cast by Chris's two closest allies. So I wasn't sure whether that was them being in the know on the Chris blind side and wanting to split the vote in case there was some idol or something, or they were with Chris. Their plan actually was to vote for Libby, but we never got to see Chris do that because he didn't get to cast his vote.
I don't know either. I was wondering the same thing.
Yeah, so that might clear up a few things. But to go back to your scenario, I think there's more value in drawing all the votes yourself, which I think is what would have happened, and then trying to turn Dominic or Wendell into Andrew Savage, basically.
Okay. No, I think that's potentially in line as well. Like, I'm sure I generally overemphasize like the value. Like, I tend to see more value than probably exists in the idea of having a big reaction at camp rather than at tribal council with an idol. I think for me, one way that I think a lot of people potentially misvalue when they're in the minority is not opening the door for people in the majority to make big mistakes. And I think when you show the majority you have an idol early and you're back at camp, you open the door for the vote to go certain ways where it becomes clear to anyone who is not in on the way the vote actually goes down that plan was made without them, and they may want to actually consider flipping over with the minority. Whereas when you do your big idol reveal at tribal council, you always leave the people can always just say, oh, it was the heat of the moment, I didn't know what to do, I'm sorry, whenever someone from the majority ends up being left out of that crazy vote. But I just feel like in general, the closer you are to Chris's spot in the game, the more you should probably be considering, my vote may be more important than extending the life of this idol another round or two that I'm probably going to play tonight anyway.
And especially if you want to end up spreading votes between Dom and Wendell, you need a lot of votes to be able to do that. You need a big cushion in terms of your majority. So throwing away your own vote means that's one more person that you need to get on board. And based on the alliances that Dom and Wendell may have been able to build, that might not be so easy to get. So if that means you now need to flip over Laurel or Donathan or something, then that potentially could put your entire plan in jeopardy. So it is worth it to just take the safe option, which is not a big move. It's not great for TV. I'm sure the producers would not be happy with him. But in terms of what he should be doing, I think, yeah, just play it safe and don't give yourself room to outplay yourself, which is what happened here.
Right. I just think there is a range between Chris and the other end of it being like the Desiree and Chelsea's and Angela's of the game at this point. Like, I think when you're closer to their spot in the game, you should just limited reservations at this point, I think just play until you lose your vote. You're not getting voted out anytime soon. You want the idol to be as powerful as possible if it's going to matter later, because it's certainly not going to matter anytime soon for you.
I also think that for as much as we like to talk all the time about the different options that players have, and it's really good to have all these choices available to you, there is something to be said for knowing what your course of action is with an idol. So if you know it's going to be either tonight or the next tribal versus just tonight, there's no choice, that's the only time I can play it, there is a case for going for the latter, just so that, like, so let's say you have the extra choice. You are probably going to spend the next few days agonizing over, should I play it tonight? Am I safe? How much room do I have? Am I misreading something that someone told me earlier? Whereas it's liberating to go into tribal with the knowledge that 100% you are safe, even if you mess up. And I think in turn that gives you more room to be yourself, to build good relationships and good connections in the game for those crucial few days after the merge. So, like, someone who is on the level of like a Kim or like a real top tier player, they would take the extra choice every time, because you can trust them to do what they should with it. But for someone like Chris, who doesn't know how bad of a spot he's in within the game, and if he did, maybe that would be even worse for him, I think there's a lot to be said for just taking that and putting it in the bank.
Right. I think one thing we talk about is what separates good players from bad players on Survivor. And one thing we wish they would do more of is just good players make better decisions when tricky situations arise. And you're right. I think for Chris, it would have been a lot better for him to just not have a decision at all and just know that he had to play the idol this round. And so let's get into, I guess, just how this merge ends up shaping up here. Obviously, we are expecting to hear quite a bit about the Dom and Chris storyline, just given how much we ended up hearing about that pre-merge. But how surprised were you at just that being essentially the only story of this merge episode?
I was not surprised at all. When you spend the past 5 or 6 weeks hammering this home at every opportunity, then there has to be a real payoff for it. You can't just bring this in 10 minutes before the end and expect that to satisfy people's need to see that resolved. But
I don't mean just bring it in 10 minutes before the end, but I mean, we heard virtually nothing along like any other lines. We heard a little bit about how Desiree may want to flip the vote on Libby, but who else did we even hear from about like plans other than taking a side in the Dom versus Chris war?
Nobody. And even when we heard from other people, it was often in reference to either one of the two of them. So like Donathan's one moment in the episode was when Dom comes to explain the plan to him, and he reminds him, or I guess tells him, not to trust Jenna and Libby. And you see Laurel just like lurking behind the tree in the background there, which is a nice shot. But what did we get from them outside of advising Dom how to execute step two of his 12-step plan against Chris? Like that's the entire focus of the episode here. And I liked the episode as a piece of television, as an extended showdown between these two big personalities, but this is meant to be an ensemble show, and I'm hoping that I will never be one to not say that we need to hear more from other people, and yeah, we need to hear more from other people, and hopefully now that Chris is gone, we're going to get more of that, unless it turns into now Dom and Wendell go after Michael, or Dom and Wendell go after Kellen, hopefully not, but or somebody else, right? Like you can see how this could just be the same story being rewritten over and over again.
Right, and I appreciate that there are a lot of things happening, I'm sure, on the Merge Beach, and they need to find a way to tell a coherent story about it for 42 minutes, you know, in the course of 42 minutes. But I would say, especially when factoring in how much we heard about Dom and Chris being like oil and water out there during virtually every episode of the pre-merge as well, there are 13 people out there on this Merge Beach, I'm guess, talking about at least a few things other than what Dom and Chris have in mind for how this game is going to play out. And I would have just loved to see at least a little bit, just checking in for 15 seconds with three more people than we got to about how things were going for them. Because while I did very much enjoy this Merge episode, I do think that it was a bit kind of heavy-handed in terms of that being the only real thing we were hearing about.
It reminds me in a way of the Exile Alliance from Token Chains, where the entire pre-merge, you would get the obligatory segment every episode of, well, two people go to Exile and now they're part of this expanding web of cross-tribal alliances, and then you get to the merge and that just falls apart. And in that case, that was kind of a damp squib, whereas here you actually got the big payoff from it. The other comparisons I see made, and to take a brief detour into the edit zone, I'm curious what you think about this in editing terms as well as just in like presentation terms. The other comparison you hear is Josh and Jeremy, where in that case you had this massive conflict at the merge, and you got a little bit of that pre-merge when they were swapped onto the same tribe, but really not to the same degree. Whereas this time around, this was just everywhere. Like from the first moment of the first episode, this was one either a big or the big storyline of any given episode. And I don't know if in this case Dom and Wendell together are the Jeremy and someone else is going to step in to be the Natalie Anderson, or if Dom is the Jeremy and then I guess Wendell becomes a Natalie in that case.
Yeah, I definitely think there is a possibility of something like that going down, although I don't think it's going to be that Chris and Dom is our new Zeke and Chris Hammonds, or Zeke and Andrea, where and we've seen many others that did not involve Zeke over the course of Survivor history, where two people just get their sights so focused on each other, they just go out 1-2 right after one another relatively quickly in the middle there. I do feel like now that Dominic has emerged triumphant in this merge war, I think he will still be around for a while. So I don't know if I'm fully buying that Josh and Jeremy possibility at this point, although it is an interesting idea, and it wouldn't totally shock me, I suppose, if we show up next week and Dominic somehow is the next person voted off for whatever reason. Sidebar, Dom, is it weird for you having someone named Dom to talk about on the podcast? Because we've never experienced anything like that, and I've never had anyone named Kellen to talk about, but at least for me, if there's ever a character on a TV show named Colin, that's weird for me. Is it weird for you talking about someone named Dom?
It's weird hearing you make jokes about it over and over again, but it's weird in the sense that how it feels to me. I expect it. It's not unsurprising, but it's or rather, it's not surprising. It is unsurprising. But no, it's just business as usual as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, well, good for you for being a pro like that, Dom. I don't know if I would ever be able to get over it if there was someone named Colin on one of these shows.
So far, Dom is repping our brand pretty well, but I reserve the right to turn on him again if that changes.
Okay. Not necessarily a Dom loyalist over here. That is a shocking surprise and radical shift in your character that I did not see coming. But let's I think it is worth getting into quickly. While it was a lot of just Dom versus Chris, and we have brought up Wendell just being kind of Dom's sidekick throughout all of this, I thought it was interesting that Wendell got that scene before, I think it was even before Chris went to Ghost Island, of trying to work with Chris and maybe potentially mend those fences and hope that this didn't become what it obviously was going to become.
He held this summit at what he referred to as his office, the place where he spent most of his time, and you could tell from his tone in that conversation, he was almost exasperated. He expected this to not go well, and in fact, it did not go well. So it was, you could tell that he was concerned that him being lumped in with either one of Dom or Chris could be his eventual undoing. That if I get tied to Dom, I want to work with him. He's my guy. But also, if everyone knows that, if they realize that he's my guy, then they're going to come for us as a unit. And however great people feel about me, they might be overwhelmed by how sketchy they are about Dom.
Yeah. Speaking of Wendell and Dom just as a unit, which I do buy, will be a thing going forward. We saw pre-merge, I think a couple of times, both of them say, Wendell's my boy, Dom's my boy. And then this merge episode, Wendell got to say, okay, awesome, I'm excited to link back up with my boy Dom here. I expect that these two will be a pair for as long as they are both in the game. And we saw this week that Wendell ended up telling Dominic about his new hidden immunity idol he found. Am I forgetting that Wendell knows about Dom's real idol? Is that something that has already happened, or did Dom take the news of Wendell having an actual idol and say, that's great, buddy, I wish I had one of my own, but sadly I don't?
Yeah, I forgot about this too, but I, from their later conversations, I'm thinking it must have been said at some point. But yeah, I was thinking when Dom heard that, he was going to like make a plea to have that used on him at Tribal so that he could keep his own. And I know there was a situation a few seasons back that it reminded me of, but I couldn't think who. And that was
Malcolm.
Oh yeah, of
Malcolm.
Course.
Yeah. With hold up, bro. Which by the way, shout out to Lisa Ferreira at Mom of Kai for completely changing Survivor canon. He didn't even say hold up, bro. That's just how the song went. He said like hold up Reynolds or something like that, but hold up, bro was a lot easier to rhyme, and everyone remembers it now as him saying hold up, bro.
Yeah, and despite other people's later attempts to embed that in Survivor canon, she, I think, is a real trailblazer there. But yeah, it's you have Wendell, who is trying to play this mediator, and I think he's not putting all of his eggs in one basket with Dom. I mean, ideally, he would like to work with him for as long as possible, but he knows that down the line he may have to turn on him. In that case, I wonder what's to be gained by telling him about the idol now, because it didn't seem like they were planning to use it this round, unless Chris also had one, in which case, after Dom uses his, Wendell would have to use his too, maybe. But otherwise, I could see it being that, like, Dom and Wendell take control, which I assume is what they're going for, and Dom might feel the freedom to take a shot at Wendell if he perceives him to be his biggest threat.
Right, and that's the thing. I don't know if I'm signing off to Wendell knows their boys now, but he may have to turn on him later on down the line. I agree that I think it's crossing his mind, okay, things may change and later on I may have to turn on Dominic. But my interpretation at this point, just going off what Wendell is saying and how it seems to me like he's being very genuine in those moments, talking about how much he really likes Dominic and wants to work with him. I would guess that Wendell, as this is actually happening, when he's showing him his idol, he is doing so because he really wants to lock in with Dom. You and me, buddy, we are going all the way here. I truly think Wendell, at this point in the game at least, is really looking at Dominic as someone he is happy to have get all of the information because he fully trusts Dominic. And we can get into whether or not that is a smart thing to do. I would probably say probably not. maybe don't put all of your eggs. And that's like, to Dominic's credit, the answer is probably not. Like, you should never be trusting anyone to that extent, but I do believe Wendell showed him the idol because he has a ton of faith in Dominic.
And do you think that Dominic then could fill that Bradley role that you were identifying for other people, where if he does stay loyal, if that I'm not going to say it, but if Dom does stay loyal, then that might be ideal for Wendell. Like, he's someone who is your closest ally, you can take him to the end and probably beat him, I'm guessing is the plan. And it must be nice to be Wendell in that case, knowing you can just beat whoever you like, and it's only a case of who you deign to take to the end with you.
Right. Yeah. It's certainly not a bad lot in life or in Survivor for Wendell there. But I really do buy that, at least from Wendell's perspective, he wants this to be, as things stand at the merge, hopefully a day 39 thing. Now, Dominic, I would imagine, still really likes Wendell and wants to work with him for a long time to come. I also would imagine that Dominic recognizes just what a formidable endgame opponent Wendell probably would be in front of a jury. And Dominic gets, I think, he gets the episode title this week talking about how fear keeps you sharp. And I think that is one of the most important things to keep in mind when you're out there playing Survivor. And I love hearing from Dominic that he is always aware that things may change and that, you know, I think a healthy dose of paranoia is something that is just mandatory and you will find in every good Survivor player.
Dom had these almost made for TV lines over the course of that conversation, saying stuff like fear keeps you sharp, as if he wasn't gazing to the camera and winking, but I don't know if he was making a bid to be like the episode title or to just get even more airtime somehow by just peppering those in there, because that's not the kind of thing that you just randomly say. So we're going to split this vote this way and this vote that way. Oh, and by the way, fear keeps you sharp. It doesn't really flow so well.
Yeah, I mean, it really does go back to Boston Rob and Marquesas sitting under the tree talking about how fear keeps people loyal. This has been a part of Survivor for a long time. I think fear is one of the most powerful motivators out there in a lot of different capacities. And I love just hearing Dominic voice that sentiment. And I think a totally like rational and game centric way of like, I want to stay paranoid because that is how I'm going to stay on my toes and end up being successful.
And I love the cut back and forth between Chris's confessional and Dom's, I it's something which you can only do rarely, maybe, but I just love that as an editing technique. And whenever you have something that you can do that for, I'm all on board with them doing that and pushing the boundaries with that. So whenever you mix up that format, whether it's two people in one confessional, like with who was the last time that did that? I know Alina and Kelly Bruno, like 15 seasons ago now, but there must be a more recent case, right?
I forgot. I don't know if there's a more recent case. I do remember back in the day, Alex Bell and Matt Von Ertfeld, I got a great two-person confessional where, like, I think I want to say it started on one of them and then like panned out to reveal that Matt was there too, and he started chiming in, and that was a ton of fun.
Maybe this is what you're getting onto, but when Coach had his and it panned back to reveal Brandon coming over and just consoling Coach in the middle of his religious breakdown or something. That was pretty cool. But maybe it was one of the Blood versus Water seasons, because that would make sense.
Mm.
I don't know. There's one example that I know exists, but I can't put my finger on it.
Okay, because when you said it, for whatever reason, the person who popped to my mind was Hayden Moss, who was on Blood versus Water, but he's always the example that pops to my mind whenever we're talking about anything good. So maybe that was just that factor playing a role there. Dumb. What more? Sorry. What do we have to get to? The next thing I have is the immunity challenge. So get to whatever you want to get to before that.
So you have Dom already before then angling for votes on the beach, and you have this. The conversation with Dom, where they come away, and this is the thing that I can never fully suss out about Dom. So I see him having that conversation, they just like nod along and say their piece, and then as soon as he leaves, there's like this knowing look between the two of them, as if even if we're deciding to go with him, we can't fully trust him. And that's the issue that I've been having over the season. I can't work out whether people are actually buying what he's selling, or if they're going with it because it's convenient and they know they have him earmarked to take a shot the first chance they get. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think the same could be said. And again, this has been a popular comparison for Dominic since before we even saw him step foot on the island. But I would say the same would be true of someone like Tony, where people were, with a few exceptions, were never really saying, oh, I'm dying to go with Tony all the way to the end. Like, sure, you had Wu and I think Trish to a certain extent, but most of the people who found themselves voting with Tony were doing so almost reluctantly, probably just feeling like it was the best plan for now, but obviously I need to keep an eye out on this guy later. And I would suspect Dominic is giving off that same kind of vibe.
And Libby makes a good point here, saying that Chris, for as much as he annoys people and is unique in his own ways, he is loyal. You can tell what he's doing. You can ask him what he's doing and he'll be upfront about it. Whereas Dom, you know, is constantly scheming, always has some plan in the back of his mind. So just in terms of your own sanity and for clarity in the game, maybe Chris is the guy you want to go with. And then we get a confessional from Jenna, which is not notable in terms of its content. It's a fairly straightforward confessional. But Jenna's look here is something to behold. So she has this like bikini plus half folded dungarees thing going on, which,
yeah.
I know because I could not pull this off myself, so I have respect for people who can.
Yeah, I was wondering, maybe I've just been missing it all season, or maybe just Jenna's not been on the screen too much, but that's the first I saw of, at least what we call in America, overalls on Jenna this season. And in your defense, half undone. Yeah, I thought that was interesting, and I was going to save this for the edit zone, but I have no takes about it at all, and now that it's come up here, we might as well get into it. I don't know what it is going to be, but something is up with Jenna, right? Like, why is she getting this confessional, other than to highlight her dungarees?
Have we reached such a bad extreme that anybody getting any confessional at all is unnecessary content? Because the only storyline that's there is Chris versus Dom, and anything else is superfluous.
I would say yes in the case of this exact merge episode. I don't think that's going to be the case going forward, but with a merge episode where so much of it's going to be dedicated to the Chris versus Dom thing, like the reason that we started the show talking about Kellen is because she still stood out. And the reason we've talked a lot about Wendell is because he's still stood out. And frankly, no one else really stood out to me this week other than we got more of Michael continuing to look good, but not really contributing much game wise. But we did hear and see a bit from Jenna, which just for whatever reason, just because it's the merge episode, I'm putting more weight on than I would in a random any other episode, essentially. But I did just I do want to just say, something's up with Jenna. Jenna's going to play a role somehow later on. That's a call I'm putting out there now. I don't know what it's going to be, but she's going to.
Are you a Jenna truther? Are you the 1% of Edric or whatever who you think she's actually going to win the season somehow?
No, although I do know that our good friend AJ Van Gilder is very high on Jenna, and she was someone that we did talk about in a previous edit zone. I remember that pre-merge scene where they showed her and Stephanie Johnson trying unsuccessfully for quite a while to find an idol, and at the time I thought, oh, it's because Stephanie Johnson's going to be one of the final two, and they're showing her working really hard and playing the game really hard. She got voted out like the following week, and I came in and said, I guess they left that in because Jenna needed to look really good. So I don't think this is the first we're seeing of Jenna potentially have there being more to the story than we've really gotten to see the beginning of at this point. I think we may still just be at the tip of the Jenna iceberg, although that may just be this season's version of Joe Mena has to find a third idol, or season 35 will end in a tie, or things of that nature, where we spend the entire season just barking up totally the wrong tree. Okay, Dom, let's get into the immunity challenge, I suppose, where it is we're going to be balancing an idol on the end of a stick on top of your head. Very straightforward challenge here, and a lot of fun. I guess you're also balancing yourself on top of a narrow platform. A lot of balancing going on in many capacities. The winner this week is going to be Kellen. What did you think of this, of Kellen, someone who I would imagine is probably going to be feeling pretty safe regardless, and was not at, I don't believe, down near the end of this challenge with someone that she was worried about potentially taking the necklace from her. I bring this up because they talked on the know-it-all. I think she was down there with Libby, and they talked on the know-it-alls a little bit about the possibility of either one of them wanting to potentially throw this challenge. Dom, is this something that had crossed your mind, of not wanting to come across as such a big threat in a spot where you're probably not leaving anyway?
Well, Steven was convinced that Kellen was going to be the merge boot last week, so she needed to win to save herself from that. But this was an interesting challenge because I think a lot of people's first reaction was they ran out of ideas and they saw a guy holding the boom mic and thought, let's just have him do that. And apparently that is what happened. That's what they took their inspiration from. But I don't know. It seemed like a pretty cool challenge. But
that's hysterical.
I don't think Kellen needed to win it the way it played out. It was always going to be Chris versus Dom or something adjacent to that. It's interesting that Kellen winning is seen as a surprise by some people, when I think, in fact, like, people talk about Michael as this big immunity threat. What has Michael done to ever make anyone think that? What challenge has he explained any kind of exceptional, like, skill or prowess or anything like that? I think people just look at him and they see, like, he's pretty muscular, he seems strong, and they just code that into, therefore, is going to win a bunch of challenges and be the next Brad Culpepper.
Did you not see him dive off that platform last week, Dom?
Just gracefully like a dolphin. That was pretty cool. But I think in the modern era of Survivor, despite the aforementioned Brad Culpepper, being just someone who's good at puzzles, first and foremost, and then also has balance, is not bad at any one thing, but is pretty above average across the board. That's where you want to be. And so someone like Kellen might actually be a bigger threat going ahead than Michael, even if you're looking at purely in challenge terms.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. And I guess just to kind of go back to the initial question, I do think there is often a lot of merit in throwing these early merge challenges. And like, the formula I would use is like, if you're never going to get voted out anyway, like it's not going to impact things for you this round. It impacts things for you this round 0%, but could drastically alter the target on you going forward. To use like the most extreme possible example, I remember actually it was the very first interview we ever did, episode 6 of this podcast in 2011, Dom, with Jim Rice. He won that first South Pacific individual immunity, and we brought up to him the idea where he got to, you know, there were many people left in the challenge. Ozzy was already out. And once Ozzy is out, there is no chance Jim Rice is ever being eliminated that night. Winning the immunity challenge, all he is doing is drawing the target bigger on himself for the following round. And we heard when we talked to Albert a couple of weeks later after that, he said, yeah, you know, if Jim had thrown that and Don had been the winner, we might have gone for Don before Jim. And then Jim would have been there at final nine, which is potentially not in that case, but a much more important round.
Sure. Yeah, in that case, I think that's pretty smart. The other person you mentioned was Libby, who normally I would say, yeah, throw this challenge, except that for some reason, all these votes keep going towards Libby, and I don't fully understand it. So you see when the Naviti women are having the one strategy scene of the episode, which is their own and not anyone else's, Desiree is arguing that Michael is such an obvious threat that he goes over the line, and now we're looping back round again. We have to go for someone who's not an obvious threat, and that's Libby, who seems like she's wanted out the whole time. Other people seem to have wanted out for a long time. What is it about Libby that has her so that has other people so spooked?
Well, I think for in particular Desiree and Chelsea and Angela, who I think were the ones coming together to talk about this, about hey, maybe we disregard the Dom and Chris war and take out a Malolo who is threatening to us. I do understand, I think, to some extent from their perspective, why Libby may be the one that would be the most threatening to them, because I would guess that they are trying to figure out where they fit in within this big Navidi alliance. And Libby seems like, hey, if we are going to get swapped out for someone else, Libby is probably going to be that person. And so like if you're specifically Desiree or whatever, I think it does make sense to take out, like they are right to be targeting the other probably less overtly threatening players, because they're by extension leaving in the more threatening players who are going to have no choice but to target each other later and more or less get a free pass, where if you leave Libby in and you're Desiree, if you're both there at final seven, it's a lot easier to boot you.
Sure. So Chris meanwhile has taken everybody except Dom and Wendell to the well together to tell them his plan, and this seems like a non-starter, because even one person dissenting from that plan is now going to blow the whole thing up potentially. And I guess the idea is, if you have a large enough margin, it doesn't matter if they know about it. There's nothing they can do. But no one is going to be willing to disagree with you in public when you have that many people there. No one's going to take a stand on anything. So you're not going to get a true sense of where everybody stands. And I know that Chris said he went around later in private to all these different groups of people and tried to shore that up. But this big like open forum, I'm not sure what that's meant to accomplish.
Right. You were never, first of all, going to get anyone dissenting to your face in front of the big group like that. You are also never, ever, ever going to get all 10 of those people or whatever to just spend the rest of the day saying, you know what, Chris's plan sounds good, let's just go with that, and never think twice about any other ideas. I think you're right. This is beyond a fool's errand. This is borderline like suicide, trying to mount this kind of giant coalition against these two people in this context, or in virtually any context in Survivor, when you're in Chris's spot within the game, or in anyone's spot. With like Boston Rob would never be this audacious, even if he thought he had control of that many people.
Right. So they all go into tribal council now, unless we have anything else before that. Chris finally gets to light his torch after, what is it, 22 days, 20 something days. I don't know if he's the actual longest stint for not having gone to tribal, but he has to be up there, right?
I believe Nick Majorano and Michelle Fitzgerald also went to their first tribal council on day 22, which is just insane to be essentially well over halfway through the game of Survivor and never have even gone to a vote. See, I would feel like I'm missing out on the full experience. I don't necessarily need to be Denise Stapley going every single fucking time, but I would like to at least go get some experience before we merge.
And Chris also joins the illustrious club of people who left at their first tribal after the merge. So two sets of legends that Chris is joining there.
Who are these legends? I know Nick is one of them. RC is the other one. Is that?
Yeah, RC, and there must be a third. But either way, Chris is in his pantheon not by himself, but with some other nobles.
Actually, I think did Jessica do that last season as
yes.
well? I think she might have been the final person there. Yeah. So it's crazy how often that's actually been happening lately.
Right. So at Tribal. This remains the big story, and so most of Jeff's questions that we see at least are focused around that. The only exception is we need to at least give Sebastian something to do in the episode. So Jeff asks him about trusting his gut, and then Chris later talks about trusting his gut instinct. It seems like Kellen has really changed the paradigm in terms of how people think, and this is already seeping through into the rest of the cast.
Yeah. Where are you? Are you a hard head guy? Are you just someone who thinks whatever a robot would do is the best decision and don't let your heart get in the way at all? Or where are you on the head, heart, gut debate?
Yeah, I'm more of a central processing unit kind of guy. That's how I reach my decisions here. But we're going to get to this vote. Kellen is wearing the necklace, which looks like it's a cheap fake that Dom would have made. It's a really low budget, low effort immunity necklace. And it's at this point, nobody knows that Chris has an idol, and Chris doesn't know that he's going to need to play that idol, so we're going to see how that gets resolved. I was thinking coming in, I don't know about you, but Libby, in that scene we spoke about earlier, said something like, it feels really good to be safe, and I could already hear the wheels in motion and the sense of foreboding growing, and I thought, I don't know how it's going to happen, because surely Chris is going to be smart enough to play it. Maybe that's how. Maybe she gets idled out somehow by the rebound from that. As it turns out, they leveled me. I overthought it. Chris overthought it too. He ends up going out here, and we end up with one of the best blindsides that I've seen in recent memory, even though it definitely should not have been a blindside by anyone's definition.
Yeah, that Libby quote that they left in about her saying, oh, it feels so good to be safe tonight, is what kept me interested during this tribal council, because to me it was clear Chris was going to get some votes, and Libby was potentially going to be the person who left if that didn't go through. I didn't think there was any chance that like Dominic or anyone else was ever going to be leaving, even if he didn't have the legacy advantage, which we'll get into in a minute. But because they chose to leave in that, like, what was for so many years just like the death knell quote of anyone who says, oh, it feels so great to be totally safe tonight, you know, not 9 times out of 10 was gone. They've gotten so good at balancing their range with that. I really was thinking it was totally possible that Chris would play his idol and Libby would potentially somehow be the merge boot here. And I was sweating this outcome all the way down to when Jeff asked if anyone had an idol and now would be the time to play it. Let's get into what did happen when he decided that now would be the time to not play his idol. First, he sees Dominic go up and choose not to play his bullshit idol that's been around his neck, but instead pull out this legacy advantage. And I was actually thinking, might seeing Dominic go up and play the legacy advantage almost like suggest to Chris, oh good, Dom's nervous, this vote's going to go my way, I don't need to play my idol? Or should it suggest to him, well, there's one person who I thought might leave that's not leaving, I got to get up and protect myself?
This is a really fun like cat and mouse game, because Chris in his ex interview said that if Dom didn't play it, then he would know something was up, because surely Dom must feel in a little bit of danger. So if Dom didn't play it and Wendell also didn't play his, although of course he didn't know that was a factor, then Chris would have felt the need to play his own, because maybe they might know something that I don't. But then if both of them had played it, then obviously our split vote plan has gone out the window, so I'm going to need to play mine too. But it's only exactly Dom playing it and not Wendell, so Wendell in theory is still vulnerable, that gave Chris, as he saw it, the freedom to not play his, and that's what sent him out.
So is there a Dom Harvey signature edgelord take that Chris actually made the right decision in the long run in sitting on his idol here, if all of those assumptions are true?
There is a massive edgelord take coming very shortly, but I think this was he definitely should have played it, because the argument that we usually make when it comes to something like an idol is if you have to play it now, then you're probably going to have to play it or something else again in the near future anyway. So it might be worth taking a chance on that and hoping that you can save it for when it might be a more pressing need for you. But in this case, when it has such a short shelf life, I think, because if you look at the other side of that, if Chris can get through this vote and he doesn't need it, he's probably not going to need it next time anyway. Whereas if you do need it tonight, then you need it tonight, and you may as well play it, even if it's only going to buy you three more days.
Right. There's no scenario where you don't need it tonight, but you definitely need it next time. Like if it is not going to go your way, it's going to be now and not next time that ends up happening. And I think, yeah, you explained that well. So, yeah, Chris ends up not playing his idol here. And Dom, despite Dominic very loudly in his voting confessional voting for Chris, like he knows at least a couple votes are coming on him. It really is flummoxing that he still ended up choosing not to play it. But I do understand.
Yeah, well,
the
hold
general...
on. No, it's not flummoxing because that doesn't give anything away, right? If you came in feeling confident, Dom loudly voting for you is not going to change your mind because you think maybe Dom and Wendell and one or two other people come for me, but we have the votes to split it either way. So who even cares?
Again, I would just go back to when this expires next round, and if it is getting turned on me, it will almost surely be tonight and not next round. I would still, in Chris's spot, obviously be playing it, although, again, it's hard to say that without sounding so mega results-oriented.
Here's the thing. When Dom does that, some percentage of the time, it's going to be a bluff, right, to try and force you into playing it. So in theory, everybody should be loudly voting some percentage of the time to try and like signal to people which way they're going, and that should be like a new gameplay standard going ahead, which it won't be. And I imagine lots of people will be thankful for that, but that's a fun thing to consider.
Yeah, Australian Survivor spoilers forthcoming. We saw a twist in this most recent season where people, they voted one person out and then immediately had to vote another person out. And in a very heads-up move, the first person out of the majority alliance that went up for that second vote out very loudly gave their confessional to make it clear who that next target was going to be, who the other people should be putting their votes on that they weren't allowed to talk about. I am surprised that we've never, I believe to this point, other than like Crystal Cox doing it to Randy to like rub salt in the wound. And I think that's what Dom was doing here to a certain extent with Chris as well. I am surprised that we've never seen some kind of like strategic angling of people yelling really loudly to either induce bluffs or like throw off their vote or to induce idol plays that are incorrect or like to bluff to get an idol played incorrectly or to just throw people off from what they're doing. I think like the closest thing we've seen to that was Will Wall like writing the air stroke, the pen strokes to make it seem like he was voting for Hannah when he was voting for Zeke. But I really am surprised that we've done however many thousands of tribal council votes at this point, and no one has, as far as I know, tried to like take some sort of strategic angle with that element of people being able to hear you if you want them to. I don't know what that angle would be, but I feel like there's potentially something there.
You also have Wendell's move of taking 35 minutes to give your voting confessional and forcing everyone else to die of boredom.
Okay. Now I know where you're. Now here's the edgelord take. So I should have seen this coming. Dom, you did not like Wendell's epic, amazing Hall of Fame voting confessional?
I liked it. I thought it was good. And then I go on Twitter and everyone's like, oh my God, Wendell. And I thought, I hold on a second. I don't quite get where all of this is coming from. Like, it's good, but to me, it's not a top tier voting confessional. It's not that. I think in a few seasons' time, people aren't going to remember this in quite the same way.
I think they will. And what is in your top tier of voting confessionals?
So you have things like Rob's Casey Kasem vote. You have there are lots of others, but to me, the defining thing among all of them is they know what they're going for from the outset. You can tell that all of this is building towards a certain point. With Wendell's, it felt like he had this setup, but he beat around the bush for so long that by the time you got to it, it was already like a full-length running confessional. And now you get to the good part, which also kind of meandered around a bit. Like it didn't hit the right note with me the way it did for literally everyone else, if my Twitter feed is any indication.
Well, I think that's the entire point, is Wendell gives the basic generic confessional, and then as he's on his way out, he just wants to say, P.S., stop rapping. But then he can't even like bring himself to put the vote in the bucket without going back in a couple more times to say, no, seriously, stop rapping. And then he goes, okay, now I'm ready to put the vote in. No, one more. You really need to stop rapping, Chris. Please hear me. I thought it was great. And I don't know if it was deliberate or not, but I did think, pump faking, putting the vote in a couple of times made it way funnier. I don't think it was him dragging it out and ruining what would have been an otherwise funny confessional. I thought that was what made it so good, is like he couldn't bring himself to stop berating Chris.
But if he just goes up there and says, you're trash at rapping, and just leads into his entire spiel there, I think it would have gone down equally well, but also that moment then becomes even more like capturable, I guess.
Okay, I don't know. I really enjoyed Wendell's confessional
that,
there.
That might be my single hottest take of all time, if the reception that it got is any anything to go by. Because it felt like it wasn't just a case of, I love it, but I understand if you don't. It was, how could you not just think that's the best wedding confessional of all time? Like, it's... I thought Dalton Ross anointed it as the greatest of all time, like 5 seconds after it happened, and that seemed a bit hasty. Like, you don't do that with any other Hall of Fame. You give it some time to rest and simmer down a little bit.
Okay. Well, we will, I guess, TBD on how well that confessional ends up aging from Wendell, although I am certainly buying that will be remembered as an all-time epic confessional.
So here's the question for me. Everyone loved that wedding confessional from Wendell, or almost everyone. Is that how the audience at large perceives Wendell? So in the context of this episode, is he the guy that you root for because he has common sense? He's rising above the fray. He's not getting drawn into this Chris versus Dom nonsense. Or is he just like Dom's appendage who is getting swept into that like arrogance that Dom is being built up to have, even if that's not how he feels in real time?
So the two casual fans I hear from the most about Survivor are my sister and casual Anna, friend of the podcast, casual Anna. And after they watched this week's episode, not together, separately, I got texts from both of them unprompted about, oh my God, Wendell's voting confessional was so funny and I love him and I'm rooting for him.
Okay. So is there potential though for now that Dom and Wendell are in charge, it goes to their heads, they get overconfident and then their downfall arc starts to happen?
I think there is potential for sure for Dominic in that capacity. I do not think that is going to happen with Wendell. I don't think that there is a very realistic timeline where Wendell, you know, come finale night is getting his comeuppance or whatever. I do you feel like that's within the realm of possibility at this point?
I could. Well, so if they do so well that they become Malcolm and Denise, maybe Wendell is the Malcolm there, as we alluded to before. But I feel like if Wendell is getting his comeuppance, it's as part of Dom getting his, and it's going to be like a 1-2 punch over the course of the next few weeks. I don't see it being Wendell makes it all the way and then gets clipped just before the end. That doesn't seem right. Too likely.
Yeah, I'm with that. All right. So one final question, actually, just on this voting confessional from Wendell. I did think it was interesting. I actually listened to an Exit interview this week. I listened to Chris talking to Rob, and it did seem like that Chris was a bit hurt by Wendell's confessional here. Was there any part of you that thought that like Wendell was just needlessly making a personal attack, or did you just think this was not funny despite not being too mean?
Well, so Wendell was very careful to make clear, you're not trash. It's just your rapping, your entire sense of rhythm, your entire musical capability is trash. And that's an important difference for me.
Okay. I understand to a certain extent where Chris is coming from, because like it really did seem like Wendell was being pretty deliberately hurtful with what he was doing. Well, I understand that like his primary goal probably was comedy, but I understand why Chris would feel like that was a little harsh, bro. But I guess what are you gonna do? Wendell's gonna go on, and everyone but Dom is going to love that confessional from now until the end of time. Dom, before we get into just parting thoughts on Chris, I'm curious what you think about Chris had to put that no vote parchment into the bucket. I would say, Jeff, that should be the first thing Jeff pulls out of the bucket is no vote. Someone got something and didn't get to vote tonight. So be aware of that, guys. There was a vote that was not cast tonight, and they go back to camp wondering who got what.
So that was my question. Did he have to actually put that vote in, or was that something that he had to hold up at Tribal for show? But when Jeff read the votes, assuming it came down to that one vote, it just wasn't going to be there.
I assume that, you know, had it been up until the last vote, a 6-6 tie, and it all came down to Chris Noble's vote, Jeff would pull the no vote thing out of the bucket. My statement is he should do that first. He should always make it clear when someone has a no vote. Okay, someone's playing a no vote tonight. Someone out there has something.
But then you wouldn't get all of the people asking on Twitter, how could they not count the votes and realize that one vote was missing, which remains the most chilling thing about the fandom over the past year or so.
Not when it's a tie with 11 people left, but neither here nor there.
I was trying to keep track on my rewatch. When Jeff read the votes, there were the two votes for Libby, and then how many votes did he read for Chris to make that a mathematical guarantee? But then if it's 13 versus 12, it's always going to be the majority of 7, right? So it's either going to be 6-6 or 7-6 in the worst case. So it doesn't actually make a difference.
Right. And I was thinking, actually, that the people who voted Libby may come out wondering, obviously, Chris didn't vote for himself. And the only votes we saw that weren't for Chris were for Libby. I know I voted for Libby. So who did you turn on Chris? Because there were only two Libby votes in there, and one of them was Chris.
I would love to see next episode if like Angela and Desiree get into some massive fight over one of them betraying Chris.
That's what as far as both of them are concerned, the other one essentially 100% must have voted for Chris and be lying, because there were only two Libby votes shown, and they always show as many votes as they can before the majority is established.
However, this also, if you are one of the two of them, gives you cover to say that you voted for Chris, because surely he must be the other Libby vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it will be really interesting. I doubt we're going to get to see much of an update on the Desiree and Angela front in next week's episode. Maybe that's my bold call of the week.
Just in general, not even on this. I would be surprised if Angela gets confessional. And if she does, she is probably getting booted somehow, is my hot take.
Okay. So that will, at least on the island, theoretically be interesting to see how the fallout from there only being two Libby votes in there goes down. But Dom, let's get into just parting thoughts here on Chris Noble, who ended up leaving us at his very first tribal council. What is your final sentiment, at least as far as we know now? I guess we still have Chris as a juror to see how all of that goes. But Chris, the survivor player, what's your take?
I love the Chris Noble experience, and I'm here for the sequel when that inevitably happens. And because we haven't mentioned it so far, if you haven't seen his Ponderosa video, watch it, and it will transform your life.
Yeah, I have not watched it. I will it. I've heard good things
about haven't?
It. I know. Oh, this Jesus is good. Yeah, I know the room is spinning for Dom right now that I haven't watched the Ponderosa video yet. I've seen about it. Malcolm tweeted a similar sentiment. I'm not like jumping over myself to see more of Chris Noble rapping right now.
You need to break your longstanding moral stance against any kind of non-show content for this. This is worth breaking that vow for.
Okay, I will check that out once this podcast is over. I too am with you, Dom. I loved Chris Noble 1.0. I am fully here for Chris Noble 2.0. I think the streak continues of every person who's been voted out so far. I would love to see back on a future season. Chris, obviously no exception there. And I love that Chris, over the course of whatever it was, 8 episodes, ended up becoming such I think it is totally ironic, but still a fan favorite nonetheless. I love that Chris became a pretty popular person on the season.
He's like Coach, except the Coach, at least Coach 1.0, was so just far off the reservation that you would laugh at him, but it was difficult to understand him as a person or how someone like that could exist. Whereas with Chris, he's wacky enough that you laugh at him, but he's also relatable in the sense that you probably know someone like Chris, someone who is that narcissistic or that self-absorbed, and you can appreciate where they're coming from at the same time. So I think Chris hit all the right notes for me. Didn't hit all the right notes while he was rapping. I, for the most part, was a big fan of Chris and what he brought to the table.
Yeah. All right. Likewise, RIP Chris. And Dom, I think without further ado, I'm good to get into the edit zone. So he is on Twitter, of course, at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. If now is the time that you're going to be tuning out, we're going to dive in. No takes barred as far as the edit is concerned. Let's do it. You are listening to the Dom and Colin edit zone.
Mike Holloway.
Michelle Ken.
Brad Culpepper.
Ben.
Chrissy.
Stephanie Gonzalez.
You are listening to the Dom and Colin edit zone.
Tune out now.
All right, here we are in the edit zone. And Dom, I'm curious where you stand on this, because I've heard a lot of conflicting opinions here. Just before we dive into the specifics, who is your number one right now? Because I know Wendell's been really popular after this episode, but it really sounds like you're still a Kel stan in a big way.
My girl Jenna is leading the pack. She's got this. And no, it has to be Wendell, right? There's no debate about that, as far as I can tell.
I think there is debate about it. I think a lot of people would still be thinking Kellen, basically on Michelle Fitzgerald logic. Actually, Scott Green tweeted something along these lines at me recently that I thought was accurate. Kellen is getting so much more of the unnecessary content, the stuff that could have gone to anyone, and they're going very far out of their way to highlight her. which I think is accurate. And it made me realize, like, if this was airing directly on the heels of Ko Rong, I'm sure I would be all in on Kellen right now by that same Michelle logic, the same way I was all in on Ken, because of course Adam's going to look good. And the same way I was all in on Brad Culpepper, because it's like the people that they're going, the disparity between how I would imagine they truly are in real life and out there versus what the show makes us, is trying to make us think about them. Where are you on that?
I think that's a different case insofar as with Michelle, it stood out so much like a sore thumb. It's like that there is literally no reason to be highlighting her here. As you said, she didn't go to her first tribal until, what was it? Like, was it after the merge?
Yeah. It was the merge. Yeah, it was her first tribal count.
And yet pre-merge, we were still getting Michelle content. I think we said after episode 5, okay, lock it in. Michelle's the winner, because by that point, it got so overwhelming. With Kellen,
yeah,
she has been to tribal enough times and she's been a big enough part of what's gone on that you can understand how she would just get this anyway. So to me, it doesn't suggest as much. The thing is, though, we have been raking these seasons over the coals in the past for their unbalanced editing. So Game Changers, lots of other examples. In many ways, this season is even worse than most of those cases. And yet it feels like certainly we haven't been saying that this time as much. And in general, you're not hearing as many people saying, you know, the editing here is really unbalanced. I wonder if that's because overall the season has this old school feel where there is more character development, that there is more focus on stuff outside the game and more chance for people to get that characterization, and so the larger picture maybe gets lost in the background there. I wonder what you think about that.
Well, I think a contributing factor in why people are maybe okay with there being some pretty invisible people to this point is that those people are like Chelsea and Desiree and Angela, and to a certain extent like Sebastian and Libby and Jenna, where it's not like an all-star season where there are people we're clamoring to see more of that they're just not willing to show us on TV. I think people are thinking, all right, I'd love to see more from Michael or Laurel and Donathan,
okay,
or obviously Dominic and Wendell.
But in part, that's because you have shown those people, and so the audience has something to latch onto there. I'm not saying that if you showed Chelsea or Angela or Jenna more, they would be these big fan favorites, but we don't know if that could hypothetically be the case because there's just nothing there. You're not giving them a chance to shine. Whereas someone like Michael, who you were saying is this like counterexample, I don't think by himself he's that interesting. He had that one great moment at the Brendan vote, which in retrospect maybe was actually what cost his tribe in the first place, because Bradley in his exit interview was saying that the vote was on Michael initially, and then when he brought out that idol, Kellen had to switch it to Brendan. So maybe he sabotaged the Malolo chances there, but by himself, outside of that, whether it's in confessionals or elsewhere, he's not that interesting. I know there are some thirsty people out there who might disagree, but restrain yourselves for now. He is not that interesting, right?
Right.
And yet he is still, I would imagine at this point, a fan favorite because he gets shoehorned in there even when he doesn't need to be. And I think if you could give that same treatment to lots of other people and maybe have the same results. Not definitely, but maybe.
Well, I think when you were talking about Kellen is getting, you know, maybe she's just so prominent because she's been involved in a lot of things and going to a lot of votes. I think Michael is the person who would be that person for sure. Me this season, where like he's going to all the votes, he's got a bunch of idols, and frankly, like, he is the young Andrew Savage that fucking of course Jeff Probst and these Survivor producers are going to be in love with. Like, Michael is the character to me where he is the Adam or the Aubrey in 32, where I'm doing the math of like, they would make him look this good anyway. He doesn't necessarily have to win when he's this prominent and looking this good. And for the record, which is not with the point that I'm talking about right now, but I agree with what you were saying about Michael not being the most compelling TV character. I agree with
that. He's somehow more monotone than I am, which is a real feat to accomplish. But the issue I have with Kellen as getting this unnecessary content is the top shelf people on the season. You have your Doms and your Wendells, and until now your Chris's. But then below that, it's quite polarized, where you have this entire tier of Chris, Angela, Chelsea, Angela, Desiree, and a few others who are just not getting anything at all. And so there's this massive gap in between where any content would qualify as unnecessary, and that seems too big to zoom in on any one of those people as, oh, look, they're getting what they don't need to, therefore they must be in the mix somehow, when getting your first confessional in 4 weeks would count by that standard.
Sure, and I do agree with you. It is, like, as I was listing through all the people that I think the general audience is more okay with not seeing that much of, I realized as I was doing it, I was listening at this point, half the cast is at the point where we're basically not hearing from them on anything close to a weekly basis, and almost at the point where like we're lucky to hear from them once per episode.
Yeah, so let's go down the list. You have Chelsea, Angela, Jenna, Laurel now is joining those ranks as well, Libby, you can start to notice a theme here maybe, and then
Desiree, Sebastian.
I thought I said Desiree, but yeah, add her in too. Sebastian, that's seven. Even Donathan is starting to fall in there too, although not quite just yet. So that's seven out of 12 people left now who we have minimal development for, and really nothing to go on for the future.
Oh, I would say the clear big four are Wendell, Dominic, Kellen, and Michael as far as editing visibility is concerned. And then I would say Donathan is in the next tier down, and Laurel is...
And that's the entire cast right there. We've covered all of them.
Right.
That's it.
Right. I think Donathan got a lot pre-merge, and I expect him to get a lot more post-merge going forward. I think Laurel is going to be involved in a lot of that. And then the rest of the cast, you're right. I would be surprised to bring casual Anna back up, if she's going to remember any of those people this time 6 months from now. Or just most casual fans are going to remember the Jennas and Sebastians and Libby's of the world. Even this, a couple weeks after they get voted out, they're going to show up at Final Tribal Council and not know who they are. But let's get into the Wendell edit that you described, and I am on board with this, is Wendell being the easy number one at this point. He continues to glow week after week. And it seems to me, as I got into in the non-edit zone, he and Dom are just going to be a package deal as far as I can tell. And I would guess they are both going to be in there at least until the final five. I really don't know how this story, frankly, at this point is going to go any way other than Wendell, Dominic, and Kellen being in there in the end game.
We had this teaser for next week of Dom maybe flying too close to the sun and people starting to turn on him. Do you think there's going to be anything to that, or is that just a standard next time on Survivor, here's something that definitely will not happen, but you can live in hope for the next week or so?
Right. As Steven once put it, what happens in next time on Survivor stays in next time on Survivor. I place absolutely no weight on anything that happens in next time on Survivor.
Fair enough. So you have him not just going deep, but actually being there suddenly in the finale and maybe longer than that.
Yes, I think so. Let's talk endgame big picture, because as I just said, I think this is a pretty bold call, but at this point, I'm comfortable finally making it. I think we are looking at an endgame where two out of three of Wendell, Kellen, and Dominic are going to be in the finals. And I would be surprised if it's all three of them, but I would also be very surprised if it's not two out of the three of them.
You do have this trend recently of final threes where everybody at least gets some kind of development over the course of the season. So last season you had Ben and Chrissy, of course, were the big two that you identified from the first episode. And then Ryan, who was a big character early and then dropped off, but then started to pick back up again at the end. Troy's Anne would maybe be the one exception to that, but Game Changers was so egregious that you kind of expect that to happen. But before that, you have Adam, Ken, and Hannah, then Michelle, Aubrey, and Ty. And you keep going back. It strikes me that in this season, if you're going to have that kind of loose balance, who would that third person even be if it's not one of the three of them? Maybe it's Donathan or something. Maybe Laurel picks up again and sneaks in there somehow. But as it stands right now, you can't really have that unless it is exactly Wendell, Donathan, and Kellen. Unless it's Michael, but I think he wins if he's there, so he must not win if you don't think he's the winner.
Right. I think Michael is the person getting a big edit that is not going to be there in the end game, just because he is so involved, has so many idols, and is the young Andrew Savage. I'm not currently looking at him as in the end game, although I'm with you. He's getting a big enough edit that were the conditions different, I would still have Michael certainly in consideration. I just do not see how he is conceivably getting there anytime soon. I'll read for you a tweet that I recently put out. Everyone loves it when I just talk about my tweets on the podcast. I said, outcome rankings for me as things stand right now. And I'm curious to hear what you say about this. I think the most likely outcome at this point is Wendell beating Kellen and someone else in the finals. I think the second most is Wendell over Dominic and someone else. The third, I would say Kellen over Dominic and someone else. The fourth, Dominic over Kellen and someone else. And I think that someone else is, at this point, my heavy front runner to be that third person is Laurel.
Oh, wow. Could you get into that quickly? Because it feels like that role could be filled by any of Chelsea, Jenna, Libby, Angela, and just keep going down the list. So why do you hone in on her?
I feel like we're seeing a ton of her relationship with Donathan, and I am, as we'll get into shortly, I still think Donathan is going to be in there deep. I feel like Laurel is we're seeing plenty of, we're not seeing a ton of her, but we're seeing enough of her to, if you're paying attention, you certainly know who she is. You probably like her enough, and you have a decent enough reason to feel like she could be in there with a chance if she ends up making it. But we're just not seeing her to the same extent. And so I'm combining both just editing logic and just her place within the game and her edit compared to all the other people I expect to be in the end game. And as much as I want to hang on to the percentage points of winner upside that I'd been assigning to Laurel to this point, I'm really feeling more and more like she's going to be in there deep, but the winning chances I think are fading, and her losing finalist chances I think are at this point for me higher than ever.
I can see that, although I don't want to see it. I want to, yeah, I right. don't, yeah, but I see where you're coming from. Going back to that tweet that you mentioned, I think Kellen is the most likely person to be in the final three.
By a mile. By a mile, Kellen is the most likely finalist.
When you combine her winning and her losing in the finals, she just completely outranks everybody else, I think. But the question is, how much of that is divided between those two outcomes? So if you think that Kellen's winning, you think the majority of that is Kellen just wins against maybe Dominic if he alienates too many people and some other third person, versus she gets taken to the end or maybe has to win her way there against Wendell or whoever ends up beating her in place of that. The thing that people keep coming back to is both of the times she went to Ghost Island, we had this quick zoom in on that piece of the parchment that said like one big mistake could end your game or something to that effect. And people are inferring from that she is going to make a big mistake. The question is, what is that going to be? So do you agree, and do you have any theories as to what might fill that role?
Yeah, so when I sent this tweet out, I got a response from at Bruce Ragas, _Ragas. The underscore is always important, and I'm probably butchering the last name, Ragas. He says, hot prediction, Kellen wins final immunity and takes either Dom or Wendell to the end, and they beat her. That's the point behind her whole storyline of one mistake will haunt you forever and trusting your gut. She makes the wrong choice and loses final tribal council. I quote tweeted that with 5 fire emojis because I love that theory. I think there could absolutely be something to that. I am at this point very close to just locking Kellen in as one of my finalists, whether she wins or loses. And I think this is a very compelling idea here by Bruce, that there is something to them constantly zooming in on that sign at Ghost Island, and something to her talking about the gut, or her gut being the thing that she's going to trust more than anything else. I could see this happening if she wins, but I think it is far more likely that this happens in the timelines where she loses.
How many points are on the scale, just for reference?
How many points? What on what scale?
On the fire emoji rankings.
Oh, it's 5 out of 5. It's okay. You got the full 5 fire emojis.
Is it integers only? Can you have like 0.5 of a fire emoji, or how does that work?
I don't think you can. I don't think they've created that emoji yet. Although maybe some hackers out there could do some work for me, and I could get some half fire emojis.
I can finally put my computer science degree to good use. But
if only.
Yeah, I think there is a lot to that. And Kellen's quote this episode that I highlighted about making relationships and doing damage, I wonder if that's meant to be seen ironically in the light of what's to come in the next few weeks. Like maybe this is a quasi Dawn Meehan kind of thing, where like she does build relationships and she uses them, but people either blame her for their ouster, or they don't give her the credit that maybe she would deserve for making those moves in the first place.
Right. So basically for me, what I'm seeing with Kellen is, at this point, I am, as I said, I am virtually just penning her in. She is in the finals, and it's a matter of which of Wendell or Dominic she's there against. I think she's going to lose if she is there against Wendell, and I think it could go either way if she's there against Dominic, and I'm not sure what other, honestly, at this point, timelines you really think there could be. Are we potentially in store for Wendell and Dominic are like her big adversaries, but potentially come endgame time, Kellen is able to corral the Desiree and Angela and Chelsea contingent and just have her way with the endgame?
I think that is the other outcome that I can imagine. Also, how does this combine with your theory that Donathan has to be in that fire challenge? Because maybe Kellen picks the wrong person to go against him or something? Or what are you thinking there?
Yeah, okay. So basically what's happened with me and with Donathan is ever since in the premiere, when he was off on Ghost Island, he was the second one there after Jacob in the back half of the premiere, and he got a scene talking about how proud he was to make his first fire. I basically decided at that point, okay, I'm going to lock Donathan in as one of the people in the Ben Dreebergen Memorial Final Four Fire Challenge, and I don't know if he's going to win it or lose it, but one way or another, I have decided Donathan will be there, and thus he will be there.
I agree with most of that, except that this is clearly the Devin Pinto Memorial Fire Challenge. I feel like if it's going to be a memorial something, it should be for the person who lost and didn't go on to win $1 million despite their best efforts.
That is a fair counterpoint, but I do think history will remember that as Ben Dreebergen's challenge. And we use memorial not in its most literal sense, the same way we use prolific, Dom, which incidentally, I have looked up the definition and I was nowhere close. So I'm gonna take back prolific. That means not even close to what I thought it has meant for the last 30 years.
I'm glad you're not even fighting it. You're just taking the ad on that one.
What am I going to do? There's no possible spin that I can put on that. Just for those curious, I've Googled the prolific definition: producing young or fruit, especially freely, as in causing abundant growth, fruitful, generation or reproduction being the context there. And then there's a link for how to use prolific in a sentence, and I will click on that one later and then hopefully be able to get back to you guys next week. But so yeah, I've decided a long time ago, and I think it is consistent with the amount of Donathan that we're seeing. I think he will be in there for the long haul, and that is why I'm also a lot higher on Laurel being in there deep as well, because they seem to be quite a pair that we've seen a few scenes of bonding and seeming to get along well.
Though, to be fair, if I was the editors and I knew that there was going to be this Final Four Fire Making Challenge, I would definitely throw in just random clips of people talking about fire to throw people like us into a tizzy.
No, I agree. And I would love it if they would start throwing in everyone over the course of the season has some mention of fire. But thus far, Domathan. Is my Donathan, excuse me. I literally just said Domathan in earnest, which I too many Dominics and Domathans floating around this season. But okay, so there, I think Donathan is likely to be in that fire challenge. I could see him winning that fire challenge and potentially being in there as a finalist. I guess winner is in play if that is the timeline. Like, he certainly seems coming across as likable enough and talking enough about where he thinks he stands within the game and how he wants to pursue that. I don't think that's the craziest thing in the world. Are we potentially overlooking Donathan as someone with a decent chunk of winner equity?
I think a lot of the audience sees him as this angelic underdog figure who we want to win, even if we recognize that he probably won't. But I don't know if in the game he's going to get that kind of respect that you need to have to win, especially given who he could be up against in the end.
Right. And that actually, I think, could be an interesting scenario as well, is if he does make it to the finals, not as the winner, but as the loser. And potentially he is Donathan Dawn, where people feel so betrayed by him that they don't end up, they feel like whatever his genuine persona of always wanting to be nice to people that I think is legitimate in his mind, and that is how like he is treating people out there on the island, as far as I can tell, at least as it pertained to Dawn Meehan. People did not, as jurors, seem to respond too well to that, and I think Donathan, if he does find himself there, could potentially have that going against him. But we'll see how that goes. Dom, I guess before we get out of here, just give me a rough breakdown of how the pie is being divided for you. Does Wendell have half of the pie or three quarters of the pie, or just how big of a favorite is Wendell and down the line?
How much does Dominic have? Because you can have him as a solid second or third place contender, or he can be a distant third who languishes far behind the other two. And that's going to determine how much of the pie there is left to apportion between everyone else. So I would say it's going to be something like Wendell 50% or more, then like Kellen 30, 35 maybe, and then the others coming in behind. But I don't know. Maybe it should just be like Wendell 80% and we're all massively underselling him.
I'm at this point willing to give Wendell at least half of the pie, and I would give Kellen at least the at least 30-35%, and I would give Dominic most of the rest. I think we are down to three, maybe four, if we want to still be including Michael, or if Donathan really is someone we've been potentially sleeping on as a winner, or if maybe Laurel is still somehow in there getting a weird kind of Sophie Clark-esque edit. I think the people even getting any kind of pie at this point we're really running low. So I think we are getting to the point where I think we're on the same page. Wendell and Kellen are going to be eating the bulk of the pie come finale night. It's just a matter of whom.
Is there anything to read into this extended pie metaphor, or are you just very hungry at the moment?
There's no pie metaphor to be had, and none that I can come up with on the spot. Dom, I think let's get out of here. Good merge discussion. As usual, he is on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. Nothing has changed since last week in that regard. Dom, anything else you want to get to before we get out of here?
No, I'm good. I feel like we haven't begged people for iTunes ratings in a while, so feel free to do that if you're in the vicinity and feel like helping us out. But other than that, I've got nothing.
Yeah, or if you want to leave some comments on our blog page accusing us of being racist, fascist, cultural Marxists, you could also do that too if you didn't like the direction that our conversation took this week.
He also called you a son of a bitch, I believe. Let's not leave that out of there. But
no, it was an S-O-A-B, because God forbid you actually spell it out and you use such brazen language. You can only go
rude.
So far as...
Yeah.
Right. You can only go so far as in-depth retellings of the Holocaust and how great of a time that was. Or like... It was just long story short, we got a completely off the rails blog comment on last week's podcast. Hopefully none this week, but we'll see. Maybe this was not the best strategy in keeping that person silent. Dom, let's get out of here. That's all. That's it. Take care, everybody.